You're listening to Geek This, the pop culture podcast with minimal nerd rage.
Hey, welcome to the show. My name is Dave Clements, and this is Geek This, where I talk about geek pop culture, such as comics, movies, and whatever the heck else I'm geeking out about, which, you know, that's the name of the game and the name of the show, obviously, because I've said it multiple times now. Last week, DC Comics gave us a horror-inspired 80-page giant in Cursed Comics Cavalcade No. 1, which is a mouthful of a title. And that is going to be the main topic of this week's episode. Also, I'm going to be bringing back an old segment from years past called The Pull List, because it is Wednesday, or at least that's the initial release day for new Geek This episodes. Speaking of new episodes, be sure that you don't miss an episode by heading over to geekthispodcast.com and subscribing. No matter what device you have, no matter what platform you're using, there's going to be a way for you to subscribe. All you got to do is jump over to the website, and it's right there on the front page. There's even a link in the show notes of the app you're using right now if you haven't subscribed, so do it. So, like I said, I am bringing back the pull list. Now, this is an experiment. This is the way that podcasting works, especially if you're a hobby podcaster like myself. You can change things up. It doesn't have to be the same. So I'm going to bring back the pull list for a few episodes, or as long as I can remember to do it. And if you like it, let me know. If you don't like it, also let me know. I want to know because you're listening to the show. The show is for you, not for me. So let's get into this. In Batman number 57, the cagey beast isn't working alone. As the Cold War between Batman and the Russian killer heats up, Batman's nose for mystery gets to twitching when he suspects there's more to the cagey beast attacks than initially thought. Not only does this tie back to the court case Bruce sat on involving Mr. Freeze, there's another villainous Gotham ghoul in play. But whom? In Justice League number 10, when Wonder Woman learns that Cheetah gained new powers and killed the Greek sea god Poseidon, that sets Aquaman off on a search for answers, bringing him into conflict with an entity known as the Flood, a herald for long-dead ocean gods with an ancient grudge against Poseidon, Atlantis, and, well, everyone else on Earth. So, who are those guys? Some very big fish, and you know what big fish do. Eat smaller fish like Aquaman and his Justice League buddies. In Nightwing number 51, after the cataclysmic events of Batman number 55, our hero doesn't remember training to fight, being a member of the Bat family, or being a superhero. And he could not be more content. It's his life, and he's just happy to live it with new friends and a roof over his head, wherever that roof might be. So, when Bloodhaven finds itself without a protector and a new group of vigilantes pick up the slack, Grayson is more than happy to yield any perceived responsibility to the people of the city. But as things start to spiral out of control, muscle memory kicks in, and he is startled to discover that he's more than just a pretty face. Quantum and Woody number 11. Quantum and Woody are having a pretty terrible day so far. Their atoms were dissolved in the middle of a nationwide disaster, they faced down their personal demons in the Otherverse, and now they're responsible for bringing a malicious entity back with them. These guys can't even finish a jigsaw puzzle without losing a whole bunch of pieces. How are they going to pull all of reality back together? Thor, number 6. If you thought Old Man Phoenix was crazy, then wait till you see what we've done to Marvel's greatest villain. It's the end of the universe and the return of Dr. Doom, a doom more powerful than anything that has ever lived. Get ready for the greatest battle the far future has ever seen, as old King Thor and the Phoenix Wolverine stand together at the end of time against an army of monsters and the final doom. All right, it is time for our main topic, Cursed Comics Cavalcade number 1. So the original comic Cavalcade ran at DC Comics from 1942 to 1954. And it was, like this book, an anthology book that showcased a variety of characters, but in the original, they would spotlight one main character. In this book, DC has taken several writers and artists and teamed them up to create this anthology that consists of 10 stories that they say, quote, promise to be the most terrifying, most shocking, and most horrific comic that DC Comics has ever published, unquote. Thankfully, they called out their own hyperbole, and they're kind of, for me at least, that, you know, just that little quote there kind of reminds me of like old school Stan Lee Marvel with those captions that just pull you in. And yeah, this book was fun. But instead of talking about all 10 stories in the 80-page giant, because that is a lot to talk about, I thought I'd share my thoughts on just a couple of the stories that I really enjoyed. And I do want to say at the beginning here that I want to see more anthology books like this from any publisher out there. It's a lot of fun. There are good stories, there are bad stories, and you're going to have that. But there was a different spirit about this book because it wasn't connected to anything directly. Yeah, I'm really glad that I read them. I'm glad I grabbed a digital copy of this book. And anyway, I'm going to go ahead and just talk briefly about some of the stories that I liked. First up was Swamp Thing in The Spread. So in The Spread, Swamp Thing comes to the rescue of a scientist by the name of Aaron Wagner. And I personally have never read much Swamp Thing, if any. So I don't know if this is a character that you would be familiar with if you read Swamp Thing or not. But this was the first story in the anthology, and it was a really good one to start with. It reminded me of Reanimator in a way, just because of the way it was drawn and with the body horror elements. That's something you don't see in DC comic books that I typically read. So it was nice to see something different, something kind of out there, kind of had an old school vibe to it too. Like maybe that's what you would have seen in like some old school horror comics. And really, I enjoyed this story, even though I'm not familiar with Swamp Thing or the world that he lives in. But from what I've read with other reviews, I guess there's a chance that these stories could be in continuity. So I might have to just pick up some Swamp Thing books that have been published recently. If you do read Swamp Thing, let me know if this is kind of the same take on them, if you've read this particular story, or am I going to be disappointed or more excited when I actually pick up some Swamp Thing books? Just let me know. Next up is Batman in Gorehound. So I read this and I did not want to like this story originally, which was surprising for me because I am a very big Batman fan. As you can tell by the pull list, I am reading the regular ongoing Batman series. I'm not reading a bunch of the other, Legends of the Dark Knight or Detective Comics or anything like that, although I probably should be. I'm not. I like to limit myself to kind of that main book. But like I said, I didn't really want to like this story at the beginning. I'm still not sure how I feel about it. If for nothing else, I like the idea that Batman was looking for this slasher, kind of in, without being punny, the same, it was a slasher in the same vein of Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers. So I thought that was really interesting. Plus, you're also getting this cabin in the woods approach because, you know, they're calling out all of these tropes as Batman's going after the killer. I did like the final girl twist on it, But the very end where he takes the killer to Arkham, I didn't really care too much for that. It was a little too abrupt, and then Batman's last line didn't really seem true to his character, which kind of made me wonder, is this when Dick Grayson is playing Batman during the trial or something like that? There's just something that kind of popped into my head while I was reading it. But overall, it was an okay story. Very short. These are all pretty short, but this was only, you know, 2 or 3 pages long. I guess maybe it was more than that, but it felt very short and ended very abruptly, which, whatever, you have that sometimes. Next is Wonder Woman in Siren Song. One of the great things about Wonder Woman that I tend to forget would be cool is the ability to weave mythology into her stories. And you do get that with some of the characters, but this story was really cool because it felt like this classic Greek story, Greek mythology, which was very fitting because it took place in Greece. And I know I get kind of the background of Wonder Woman and whatnot, but it was really, really neat because throughout the story, Diana is playing the role of the narrator, which gives this feel. It feels as if she is passing this story down orally, which was the tradition for centuries. Before people were writing things down, they would tell these stories, these myths and legends, to the kids or to other people, and that's the way it was done. And I thought that was really, really cool. And the artwork by Victor Ibanez was really off the wall. Very cinematic feeling, for me at least. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I have not been a person that has been very interested in Wonder Woman comics. I've tried reading some of them. I just have not been able to get into them. But this, kind of like Swamp Thing, makes me go, okay, let's try my hand at this again. So if you are reading Wonder Woman or you have read Wonder Woman, give me some suggestions on where I should start to get the best Wonder Woman stories. Finally, my last pick is Guy Gardner in Life Sentence. So again, being newer to the DC Universe, really starting to put feelers out there and trying to understand different characters, different storylines, understanding the DC Universe as a whole. Guy Gardner is not a Green Lantern that I'm familiar with. I've, you know, experienced Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart, and they are two of my favorites. And Guy Gardner is one that every time I've seen him depicted, he's kind of a jerk. And maybe I'm not wrong in assuming that that is how he is. Maybe I am wrong. But I did like this story. For me, there was something sort of Edgar Allan Poe about it. And I've not read a lot of Poe ever. I've read some stories here or there. But there was this haunting kind of like lesson at the end where it shows this side of Guy Gardner that, even with my limited knowledge of him, shows how good of a lantern he really is and that he understands the sacrifice that he's making while he's wearing the ring. And that was very cool. Like I said, kind of haunting. And again, makes me go, tell me more about this character. Tell me more about the world he lives in. Now, I've read Green Lantern stories. David Hunt has, you know, been a Green Lantern fan for a very long time, and you know, so he probably knows more about Guy Gardner, and maybe we need to talk about it. But I'm very interested again in finding out more about this character. So all in all, this is a fun collection of stories. I only touched on a few of them, but like any anthology, there are going to be hits and there are going to be misses, and there are going to just be some stories you like more than others. I am thankful that DC put together some good writers and good artists, you know, despite how well-known they were. I looked through, and there were only a couple of names, primarily Tim Seeley, who wrote the Swamp Thing story. you know, I didn't know a lot of the writers or artists. And I think that says something about how much DC trusts their creators by, you know, picking these artists and these writers to work together on an anthology like this, because you never know, like, maybe this is a thing where, you know, they're going to start pairing up these particular creators for bigger projects. Maybe this is kind of a testing ground. It's kind of interesting to me. At least that's what I thought. It's not perfect. You're never going to have a perfect comic book, I don't think. But it's a collection that I would like to buy physically and pull out every October and flip through. It's just, it's a lot of fun and it gives you that spirit of Halloween that you're looking for in October. I really enjoyed it, and it is currently $10 if you want to order a digital copy. I have not seen the price of a physical copy. Let me know, you know, in the comments at the show notes or through our contact page, what the price is, or, you know, obviously I'll probably look it up after I'm done recording the episode. Anyway, done rambling for a second. Before I end the show, I want to share some feedback that I received from last week's episode about Halloween Film Fest. This is an email that was sent in from Ben Avery. If you have not ever heard me talk about Ben Avery, that is a surprise, because I talk about him, well, I talked about him a lot, you know, in previous years, because I was more involved in projects that he was working on with other podcasters. But Ben is one of the people who inspired me to start Geek This, and is the host of several other shows like Strangers and Aliens, Welcome to Level 7, Comic Book Time Machine, probably some that I don't even know about. He's also a comic writer, and he's known for adapting George R.R. Martin's Hedge Knight into a multiple book series. He's also written several books for Kingstone Comics like Book of God and Job, and he's even done his own stories like The Life and Times of Julius Destructus and Twas the Night Before Krampus. Those two books I own, and they are so good, and I pull them out every Christmas. Anyway, all of his projects, written and in audio, you can find over at benavery.com. But this is what Ben wrote in regards to last week's Halloween episode. Listening to your Halloween episode, and I have to disagree with you on the Haunted Noises short film. You said it wasn't believable. I find it interesting that it hit us in two completely different ways. What made it believable to me, in a short horror film logic kind of way, was that the guy took a job that was beneath him in an artistic way. So he goes off and tries to do this commercial, unartistic job when he's said he really wants to do an experimental work of art. He's frustrated artistically, but he does it because he has to. Then, when he's sitting with his mom, it happens. This hack job gives him the chance to do something truly experimental. This is capital A, art. He sacrifices his mom for his art, and he pays the price. Perhaps the reason this one stuck out to me was that I'm going through a creativity crisis of my own. Obviously, I'm not going to let my mom die so I can make art, but my family has taken a toll from me in my artistic endeavors and creative depressions past and present. Anyway, that's why that one connected with me. Thanks for the heads up this episode gave me to this set of short films, or short movies, rather. I misread that. He continues, I actually had seen them and skipped them, not knowing what they were. I was glad to watch them. Short form fiction is difficult to do, and most of these were well done. I agree about the pumpkin carving one not being great, and the end of the Lippy one turned me against it completely. So Ben, I just want to say thank you so much for leaving feedback and disagreeing with me. I think that's what makes a community better, is if you can have conversations about, after reading this and thinking about that short film again. It hadn't even crossed my mind to look at that from that perspective. Now, I don't create things for a living, even though I think that's really what I want to do. You know, I have a, you know, like a 9-to-5 desk job that It's pretty monotonous, and like I can just, you know, type away, click, move on. There's not a lot of creativity involved, but I can see how you would do some projects out of desperation. I know I've taken on some design jobs that just were soul sucking. And obviously it's not to the degree of this guy in the short, but you do long for that perfect project, that one project that you can express yourself. And I'm really glad that you brought that to light. So thank you so much. Also, I am so glad that Lippy was not on your favorites list. I'm really confused about what happened there, and I'm really hoping I don't get comments from anybody saying that Lippy was good, because it was terrible, and I will argue with you. That does it for my look at Cursed Comics Cavalcade number 1. Let me know what you thought of this episode and any others, as well as subscribing to the podcast over at geekthispodcast.com for links that will work in your favorite podcast app. I will talk to you next week, but until then, keep on geeking out.